we would have not afforded our house. Like, we would have been evicted. Mm-hmm. And how they kind of, even with Burgerville, who kind of claims to be a more, like, not McDonald's as far as being progressive, how the workers move from having needing their money and out in the picket line. Like,
that's
is there
a really big question. We probably don't have time for me to answer it, but I think I'll just say that they have done a lot of organizing mm-hmm. around mutual aid programs, actually right. okay. in part inspired by the Black Panther mm-hmm. Party. So assisting workers with food and childcare and subsidized mm-hmm. transportation. I think those types of meeting folks' basic needs mm-hmm. is really critical to yeah. getting folks involved in
really
organizing.
Necessary. Absolutely. I think a lot of people don't think about it. They're like, oh, just organize and strike and
it's hard. It's really
lose your car, lose your apartment, yeah. lose your house. Yeah. yeah. Did you have one more quick one?
No, I'm good.
Okay. We made it to 6:30. I want you guys to come back again sometime. I know you've been on the radio before because you're both all three of you are very charming and educated. So we're going to close out with a happy birthday song from Ann Feeney, who has a July birthday. And she is an activist songster, and she wrote this song.
Listen up. We've got a war zone here today, right in our heartland. And across the USA, these multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true. But they've declared a war on us. Fight back, it's up to you. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots.
Like the KBOO Community Radio Facebook page. Find KBOO Community Radio on Facebook and like our page and have events, ticket giveaways, and great information delivered directly to your personal feed. 1 out of every 7 humans is on Facebook, so using Facebook to share KBOO with your friends and family has never been easier. Like KBOO on Facebook today.
Billy Rose was a lowrider. Billy Rose was a night fighter. Billy Rose knew trouble like the sound of his own name. Busted on a drunken charge, driving someone else's car. The local midnight sheriff's claim to fame. In an Arizona jail, there is some who tell the tale. I believe fought the sergeant for some
Prison
milk
pipeline.
That he demanded.
I'm your host, Nifer, and today I'm sitting here with Sue Aker, a member of the board of directors. Welcome to Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Nifer, and today I'm sitting here with Sue Aker, a member of the board of directors and a volunteer instructor for Living Yoga, an organization that brings trauma-informed yoga to different mental health institutions, community health centers, and places of incarceration. Today, Sue and I are here to talk about Living Yoga's program, specifically as it relates to prison populations. Welcome, Sue.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. So, would you be willing to just start off by giving us an idea of Living Yoga as an organization? Who are they and what do they do?
Sure. Living Yoga has been a nonprofit in Portland for the last 20 years. We're in our 21st year, which is very exciting. So it started out really just with a focus on bringing trauma to individuals who didn't have access. And I think the prisons were the first place it was started. And then recognizing that yoga is really a good treatment for trauma, and recognizing that trauma comes in many forms, then over the years we've expanded not just to people who are incarcerated, but people who are in addiction treatment centers and other community and mental health facilities, as well as in the last few years, which I'm really excited about, also moving into just community environments, not just people who are, you know, in a place for a finite period of time, but, you know, for example, facilities in the community where we can continue to reach people, say, after they're out of an acute treatment center or after they've come out of the prison system. So that's exciting. In terms of in the prison system, we really, the goal is to work with people and recognize the trauma they're experiencing, and that yoga is an incredible tool to help heal some of that trauma.
So you mentioned that living yoga specifically brings trauma-informed yoga. And for those of us who might not have heard of that before, what does it mean to be trauma-informed in a yoga practice?
Well, there's a number of specific tactics that are trauma-informed. And then also there's, so in terms of how we teach in the prison, there's both recognizing the trauma-related form, and then also just recognizing what are the rules and regulations in prison. And trying, and it's been interesting for me to watch how those have kind of co-evolved. So, for example, if somebody, and it depends on the form of the person's trauma in some ways, what you might need to be mindful of in teaching yoga. For example, uninvited touch can be very traumatic for people who have experienced some interpersonal trauma. And then there are also these interesting overlaps. So people who are incarcerated, there's that trauma of being, you know, ripped out of the community, but many of them have also experienced interpersonal trauma. So it's interesting that some of the ways we've evolved the teaching practice kind of accommodate multiple levels of trauma that people experience. So not, you know, engaging in uninvited touch is trauma-informed. It's also one of the rules in the prison that you can't touch other people, which is kind of challenging for me as a person who thinks touch has a great healing value, but we have to go with what the rules are. The other aspect that I think is the most unique about trauma-informed practice is offering, you know, we're offering yoga poses, we're offering paying attention to the breath and the connection between the movement and the breath, but not demanding anything. So we always try to offer poses as an option, but it's also an option not to do it. So really giving people a choice, and I've talked to people who have experienced different forms of trauma and have said that they actually tried yoga but avoided it because they felt, you know, they were pressured to a pose they weren't comfortable with or something. So it's that real liberation of letting people choose what they want to do with their body, when they want to do it with and if what all they want to do in that session is sit and breathe, that's perfectly okay.
So how long have you been working with Living Yoga now?
I have been teaching since 2013. Valentine's Day 2013 was my first class that I taught, so that's how I can remember it. So just over 6 years.
And do you remember looking back when you first started, do you remember the difference, like what, how do I put this? How did the difference between trauma-informed yoga and, let's say, traditional studio yoga, how did that difference, like, did it stand out to you? Like, was there anything unique about it? Did it change any perspectives for you?
Well, it changed my perspective both. So the training I went through to teach was very helpful in if you go in to teach a class where people aren't necessarily eager to be there, that can be really intimidating. So recognizing just, you know, the benefits, the showing up, just even showing up for people has tremendous healing power and can give some people consistency in life that they haven't experienced before. So, and this kind of the de-emphasis on, it's not about, like I always tell the students that, you know, we call it a practice because there's no perfection and you're just trying to, and every day may change. So really embracing that, not trying to push yourself and achieve some sort of perfection in a pose and not looking around and comparing yourself to others and just trying to really, you know, so even when I'm in my own practice I often practice on my own, but if I'm in a class, trying to not pay attention to, you know, the person that's more flexible than you or, you know, can do that pose that you can't do. And it's really not about that. It's really about finding that inner connection to yourself and your breath and calming your mind, and not the competition aspect that you can see a lot in a studio practice. And then really encouraging the students to not try to push themselves either. The goal is not to get injured, and you know, it's not comparing and contrasting, and everybody has things they're better at, and just kind of embracing that acceptance of differences where we're at, and that your body can change day to day, and so it's not about the pose as much as just being connected to your breath.
So currently you're an instructor at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility, right?
Yes. Yes.
How long have you been teaching there?
I believe I've been there, I think this summer it'll be 5 years.
And if I may ask, what prompted, wherever you were teaching in your first year, what prompted mm-hmm. the switch to Coffee Creek, and what was that like for you?
Mm-hmm. The first year I taught, I was teaching teenage girls in a rehab facility. And sadly, we, Living Yoga, stopped partnering with that facility because they kind of changed their leadership and they weren't as enthused about bringing yoga into the young women. So then there was a need to, I had to find a new placement, and there was some needs for positions at Coffee Creek. So I was just kind of a natural fit. And I really liked working with the female population. So I either was teaching women, the youth, or the adult women at DePaul. And so going to the women in Coffee Creek was an easy transition for me. And a lot of the women at Coffee Creek actually have experienced addiction. So in some ways, it was a similar population with similar challenges that I was seeing in the community.
Right. In looking back over your time at Coffee Creek, are there any memorable moments that stick out to you, or anything that you think like really changed your perspective, or that stuck out, or that mm-hmm. like it stands out as significant to you?
Well, I think the thing that strikes me, you know, sometimes you go and it can be tiring and, you know, it's after work on a Thursday night and traffic was terrible. But I realized that every time I teach a class there, I am so uplifted when I'm on my way driving home. And there's a number of reasons for that. One is that the women who are in these classes often have to wait a very long period of time to get the privilege of going to a class. So they're great, really happy to be there. And they're so incredibly grateful. And there's just times when they'll, you know, tell you individual stories. And I had a woman last year who was, you know, counting down till she was going to be out of prison. And she was talking about how she was so excited to bring her yoga practice home with her and share it with her children. And she said, I want them to feel this. And she put her hand on her heart and just took this big breath. And, you know, it was just so beautiful that she recognized that, you know, this was a practice that she didn't have, and how much impact it was having on her daily life and how she just interacted with other people. And then her willingness to take that home and spread it to her children. So you recognize that ripple effect. That also reminded me that so many of these women in prison are mothers. And so I've been there on, you know, Mother's Day weekend. So there's some very sad times when you're there on a holiday or on a Mother's Day weekend when you realize these women are not with their families, and that's extremely challenging for them. So to be able to be there and share that with them and help support them that time is really beautiful. And I had a woman last month who I just went around the class and asked people, what does yoga mean to you and why are you here? You know, why do you practice yoga? And often it's things like, it makes me feel grounded, it makes me feel calm. But this woman said, I'm working on learning to love myself. And I just, it was so touching. And you realize, like, you're really, even if it's one person in the class, but if you can touch somebody that deeply and connect them back to their own humanity and value, you're doing amazing work, and that's so rewarding. So, and I usually end the class with, I read them part of this Desiderata, and it says, you are a child of the universe, no less than the trees and the stars. You have a right to be here. And I think a lot of the women have certainly never have been told that, and certainly often don't feel that. So trying to reconnect people to their humanness, and that there are people in the world that care for them and love them, is really important. So
it sounds like it's really very connecting, mm-hmm. connecting work to be able to teach classes there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And after you do it for a while, you've realized people start to get to know you. And so it's really nice when I go into a class and people greet me by name. And I had an experience a few years ago where I was actually leaving class, walking across the yard, and I heard somebody calling, "Sue, Sue." And I was like, this was clearly not someone who had been in the class I had just taught. So I looked around, and it was you. And I was so excited to, you know, and we just chatted. Of course, we couldn't hug because we're not allowed to hug in the prison yard. But yeah, I think you told me you were getting ready to leave Coffee Creek soon. And I encourage you to find me and connect with me when you got out. And so I'm so grateful that you did that.
I am as well. I remember that moment, actually. And it's, I agree with you. It's that, I think it's a very similar for people who are incarcerated, whether at Coffee Creek or elsewhere. It's, there's a special bond with people who take the time to volunteer, because I think it's understood that, you know, they don't have to be there, that people are doing something because it's like they want to contribute, that there's this want to help people change their lives, and that becomes sacred. And I think from my experience and from what I've heard of others, like, that's, you know, really helps people grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, my parents used to have a saying when I grew up that there but for the grace of God go I. And I really believe that. Like, there's so many people who are incarcerated who, they didn't do something so extraordinary out of the ordinary that other people have done. They just got caught. And there's so many people who are in prison due to, you know, childhood trauma that led to an addiction, that led to other illegal behavior. You know, so there's these circles of events that are impacting people that are leading them to prison that I think they don't completely have control over. And so I just have a lot of compassion for that, like getting caught making a mistake, that many of us made those same mistakes. So I just see the humanity in trying to change the work and trying to help people. There's certain, obviously, there's some people who I don't think ever should be in prison. I think if we did better with treating domestic violence and ending domestic violence and ending addiction, we could dramatically lower the prison population. But until we can make those reforms, what we can do is recognize the humanity and the compassion, have compassion for people who are there and try to help them not get out and then not return and rebuild their lives. So I think it's really powerful work. Because I know there's people who feel like, why, if we don't believe in the prison system, why are we involved in the prison system? And, you know, my response is, we can't fix the whole system at once, but within the confines of the system we have, we can do a lot of healing by just recognizing the humanity of the people who are stuck there.
Speaking of incarceration as a system, how do you think volunteering at Coffee Creek has changed your perspective around incarceration, if it has?
Well, I think, you know, I think you see people one-on-one and you recognize, you know, like I said, you recognize for some people it was just a one-time mistake that they had no control over. And also, you know, you just, I mean, part of it's just from the one-on-one, and I've also just done a lot of reading on my own, recognizing that, you know, there are biases in the system that lead certain populations to be more likely to be end up in prison even after the same behavior than other, you know, obviously people of color are more likely to end up in prison than white people and things like that. But also just the humanity of, you know, I go there on Mother's Day weekend and these are moms and they're not, you know, I just never had thought about how many mothers are in prison and the impact that's going to have not only on them, but their children and their families and just the, you know, there's just this cascade of impacts, right? They're not there to help raise their children. The family loses income. They're separated. There's just so many, levels of not only the trauma that's happened to get them there, but that continuing trauma of just being caught up in the system and the cost of being there and the, you know, charging for phone calls. And it's just kind of perpetuates the trauma. So I didn't have as deep a knowledge of that before I started volunteering.
If you're just tuning in now, you're listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Isabel St. Clair, and today I'm sitting in the studio with Sue Aker, a volunteer yoga instructor and a member of the board of directors of Living Yoga, an organization that brings trauma-informed yoga to different facilities. to mental health institutions and places of community health centers and places of incarceration. So I was wondering if you could speak a little bit with your 5 years of experience in working at Coffee Creek. What have you heard from inmates about how yoga has impacted their lives?
Well, many of them will talk about kind of the in the moment effects that they feel like the classroom is kind of a safe space, and they can really calm down and feel relaxed in an environment where they don't have that regimen every day. They speak about, I spoke earlier about how one of the things about trauma-informed yoga is just giving choices of poses. So we might, you know, if you're familiar with yoga, we might be tree pose, but tree pose can have many different forms. And I encourage them to use the wall if they need some support. But I also say, you know, I encourage them to listen to their body, which I think is a real practice that takes some training, is to really pay attention to how your body's feeling. And that if they don't want to do a pose, then they really don't have to do a pose. And I remember one woman came up to me. She had started out, we did some seated poses, and then we went to standing, and she just stayed seated, and she was just doing some breathing and child's pose. And I had made eye contact with her at one point, and it was clear that was, you know, she wasn't in any, you know, distress. She just needed that today. And she came up to me afterwards, and she just expressed so much gratitude. She's like, thank you for not calling me out for not doing the poses. And it's like, hey, we don't do that in Living Yoga. It truly is about choosing the poses you want and doing what you need in this hour. It's your, you know, try to tell each of them it's your yoga practice. And so not to try to pay too much attention about what they can't do. Sometimes I actually quote Teddy Roosevelt, which I know is crazy, but I found a quote from him that says, do what you can with what you have where you are. So I encourage them, like, you know, where you are means not only in this space in the prison where we have limited props and things, but also just where you are in your body today. And so I think they really appreciate just spending time noticing their body, noticing their breath. Some of them have never, you know, put their hand on their heart and on their belly while they're breathing and just really attended to their physical needs. And then also, you know, I think often we put, especially as women, we spend so much time being trained to care for others and not care for ourselves. And so giving them a time to actually pay attention and look after themselves is really unique. And in the environment of a prison where then they're going to walk out the door and the guard's going to be telling them to do this and that, and there's a lot of stress, I think it's a really, even if it's just that 1 hour, it's a welcome reprieve. And I encourage them to try to take their yoga practice out into the day and learn to kind of take that pause and take a deep breath, and that that breath can really change their mindset and literally change their brain. Sometimes I'm a neuroscientist by training in my day job, and so sometimes I will actually introduce a little bit of the concepts of neuroscience and how the physical body and the breathing can change the circuits in the brain. And so I think they like that little sciencey bit sometimes too. So it's, I get a lot of positive feedback about, they feel that, you know, grateful and enriched by having us there. So it's good.
I'm not sure if you can speak to this, but for most women that come to a class at Coffee Creek, do you know if they've had experience with yoga before? Do people come in generally like having an idea of what the class will be like? What do you normally see?
Well, we always ask whether anybody is in their first yoga class just to get a gauge. And I would say most weeks that I teach about once a month, and most times I go, there will be one or two people who are in their first yoga class. But then you also have people who have been coming for years. So it's quite a range. And I know in talking to women, like either before the class or after the class, some of them have had, especially as time goes on, you will have people that they've certainly heard of yoga and they have a concept of what yoga is. And so sometimes we'll have discussions about the different types of yoga practices, especially if they're getting ready to leave Coffee Creek and go back to their community and they're trying to find ways to continue their practice. And so then we have conversations about all the different styles of yoga that there might be out in the community and what to look for and avoid. And you know, I explain to them, you know, it may be, you may have to shop around a little bit to find a studio that's going to have this style where it's really welcoming to go slow and not do a lot of poses that are going to injure your body, and you know, kind of be willing to not necessarily do the most challenging physical pose, but it's really about listening and connecting the breath to the movement. And it doesn't have to be elaborate and exotic, and you know, so it not may not be what you saw on the cover of a magazine or something. And just encouraging them to think about more about how they feel doing a pose and how they look doing a pose, because there can be a lot of self-consciousness. And sometimes when people come into the class, it can be very nervous and they might get kind of giggly, you know. So you can see every once in a while somebody who's just kind of anxious about it. And so I just try to welcome them to, you know, accept that everybody's different and we're not there to judge. So it's a process, and encourage everybody to be supportive of each other as well.
Do you ever notice any pushback in classes from people?
The most times I've seen a little bit of conflict is in those situations where, like, somebody is really deep in their practice and there's a new person that might be really giggly. And it, one time I remember that sticks in my mind, for example, is this person was super giggly, and then her neighbor started getting giggly. And the students that had been there longer were more upset that I was feeling disrespected than that the, you know, partly if the practice is being disrupted to the point where they can't hear the instructions. And but they were often like kind of defending me. so then we had a little conversation. I was like, you know, it can be challenging and awkward to come into a yoga class, and sometimes that's just people's coping mechanism. And so if we just encourage them and, you know, encourage them to breathe, because it's hard to take a deep breath and laugh at the same time, and let's work with them and encourage them to come back, rather than I don't want somebody to feel shamed that they were silly in their first class and then not come back. So it's really about trying to work with everybody and encourage every people to keep trying. So that's the biggest pushback I've seen, is just people feel like I've been disrespected, but I let them know that I didn't feel that way, and I'm happy to have anybody there that wants to be there.
So we have a couple minutes left in the show, and I'm wondering if you'd be willing to share, over your 6 years of experience working with Living Yoga, how would you describe perhaps the way that it has either influenced your life or influenced the lives of others?
Well, I mean, one thing that's certainly happened with me is just the joy of seeing women. I work on the minimum side of Coffee Creek, so many of the women who are in the classes are eventually going to be paroled. And Coffee Creek's the only prison in the state of Oregon, so many of the people are going to go far and wide across the state. But staying connected to people after they've come out, I have Facebook friends in other parts of the state who've stayed connected. And then obviously the women who come back into the community, like yourself and some of our other volunteers who come back and then get connected to Living Yoga, is just incredibly powerful. That ripple effect in the community is just beautiful. And I, you know, as a board member, the other big part is being an ambassador about the organization and trying to get people to support it, to volunteer their time or treasure and help support it and expand it as much as we can. Because I think it has impacts. You know, if we can get more people understanding their bodies and staying connected to their bodies and recognizing trauma sooner and using this as a tool for recovery, it's just going to have a great impact on society as a whole, and maybe keep people ever from getting into prison if they could cope with their traumas earlier in life.
If someone wanted to find out more information about Living Yoga or about how to get involved, how would they do so?
Well, you can go to the all-powerful internet and look up Living Yoga. It's living_yoga.org, I believe. But if you just put Living Yoga Portland, you're going to find the website, and you can find information about donating, doing teacher training. We had a lot of community classes. We also have continuing education classes. So even if your organization is interested in trauma and how it affects the body and the brain, and how yoga can be a tool for resilience, you can sign up for a group for one of these workshops on learning more.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Sue. I'm very grateful that you came in and were willing to share about this.
Thanks, Isabel. It's great to be here.
So take care and enjoy the rest of your day. You too.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Stay tuned for Hard Knock Radio coming up right now.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Project Northwest's third show on Saturday, August 10th at 10 p.m. at the Atlantis Lounge in Portland. Project Northwest is a local zine that helps promote hip-hop and R&B artists who are local to the Pacific Northwest, with an emphasis on showcasing artists who are Black and POC, LGBT.